Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, and welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm so glad you joined us tonight. I'm Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop, and your host. And this is the second of three planned open question and answer sessions that we're offering, in addition to our regular monthly radio show that airs on the second Friday of every month and features a guest expert. We've already received some questions via email, which we'll be answering over the course of this hour, but we're also taking questions on the fly. So you can call in live or join us in the chat room with your question, and I'll answer it live on the air for you. And I especially like live questions because if I have a question, it helps me better answer the question to be able to have some dialogue. Sometimes I need a little bit more information. Let me tell you, before we dive into the questions that I do have, let me tell you how to ask questions during the live show. You can either call in by dialing 1-347-205-9654. I'll say that again. It's 1-347-205-9654. And then press the 1 key on your telephone keypad to raise your hand. And that way we know that you actually have a question. You're not just listening. The other option is that you can go to parentstooltalk.com and go into the chat room during the live show. And my producer, Chris Gooley, will take your question and pass it on. All you do is go to parentstooltalk.com, and then you click the play/chat button just underneath today's show title and description. So to accommodate as many questions as possible, if you can, initially keep your stories and background information brief and ask the question in a general way if possible so all of our listeners can benefit from the answer. If I need more information, I'll ask. If you're live, I can ask for a little bit more information. And then after kind of answering it in a general way, I can really zoom in and help customize the answer specifically for your family once I have those extra details. So let's get started on some of those questions. Let's go to one of the ones that we got by email. This first question is from a professional, and she says, there are two situations that I need help with to direct a family. This family has two children from a previous marriage and a baby from their present marriage. The baby is 8 months, and they have a 3-year-old and a 14-year-old. The 3-year-old is being abused by his dad when he visits him. Mom and her new husband have custody. The 14-year-old was just picked up by the police in a car having sex with a 19-year-old. Yes, the 19-year-old is in jail. I'm strongly encouraging the family to report the abuse of the 3-year-old. The father is good about not leaving marks. Any direction would be helpful. And she has a final question. Do you do private classes with families in need? First, to answer the first question, which is that she's strongly encouraging the family to report the abuse, so I'm going to say yes, absolutely. The key is to be documenting if the father's good at not leaving marks. They need to be very observant and to document. I'm not an attorney, but I would really recommend that they contact their attorney and look into possibilities of around maybe supervised visitations so that maybe someone can be keeping a closer eye on what is happening with dad during those visits. There was no specific question about the 14-year-old having sex with the 19-year-old. But I would say I'd be curious to know what they're doing about that issue. I certainly think that listening to the January show on talking to kids about sex would be good, and possibly looking into more of the resources that we shared there, because the parents really do need to have a talk with this 14-year-old. And, of course, there's there's just talking, and then there's also a whole issue of what kind of supervision, discipline, and I'm, of course, I don't obviously don't have very much information about what's going on with that. So I would just say something needs to be done to address that also. To answer her last question, do I do private classes with families in need? I'm not a therapist. I'm not a licensed therapist to do private practice. What I do is I do work one-on-one with families, primarily with graduates who already know the skills. I really prefer to teach the skills in a group setting, and then I can work with folks one-on-one to apply the skills that they learn in class to specific problems that they're dealing with in their family. And through that process, sometimes I will recognize that there's a problem that really needs more expertise or maybe specialized help or therapy, and then I will refer them out for that. Certainly with local families, I can do both in-home and on the phone, but I also can do consultations on the phone with anyone around the world. Skype and services like that are really wonderful because I can talk with parents anywhere in the world free of charge, so or at very little charge. So I hope that it was kind of a I wasn't quite sure specifically what those questions were, but I hope that offers some information. Chris, have we gotten any other questions by email?
Yes, we received a couple other questions, Jody. I'll go ahead and tell you the second question while we wait for some perhaps questions from the chat room.
Okay.
It says, hi, Jody. We are trying to teach our five-year-old son how to react when an adult friend or family member he does not know very well or whom he does not see very often asks him a question or tries to engage him in conversation. He tends to come across rude because he will either make a sort of grunt and dart away or give a response that is curt. If a person asks him to repeat what he said, he sometimes will loudly say, I already told you! Exclamation point. I think he has just not learned how to deal with interacting with unfamiliar adults. We do not expect him to be lovey-dovey with adults he does not know well, but we would like him to learn how to be respectful and considerate. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated.
Good question, and I can actually kind of relate to this one a bit. My son wasn't real crazy about talking to other people also, and there were times that his response, I thought, in my opinion, kind of came off a bit rude, and I was sometimes a bit embarrassed, and so I can relate to that. And by the way, he's 25 and has very good social skills now, so it does get better. I think that this mom is on track in thinking that it's probably unintentional, that he just hasn't mastered the skills. I would say particularly at age five, that's probably the case. Social skills and conversational skills don't always come naturally to children, and a lot of it is learned within the family and you know, how we talk to each other. But some situations don't really arise until you are talking to someone outside the family or someone you don't know. So I would say, yes, he probably needs some help in developing the skills. It sounds like they're already working with him on that and are looking for maybe just some extra ideas for how to teach those skills. Probably my best recommendation, that's the first thing that pops into my mind, is to role play situations with him. Of playing different kinds of situations where maybe this has happened in the past and kind of make it just around play. And in those situations, you play the adult that might say some of the things that people have said to him, and then he practices responding back. If he's not sure what to say, or you can prompt him, you can actually give him the words. And I really encourage parents to do more than say things like, talk nice, be respectful. Tell children exactly what that sounds like. Give them the words. Give them the tone of voice. Teach them how to make eye contact. And that can be really difficult for children who are shy. They don't have to, you know, stare them down. But particularly in our culture, and we'll talk about American culture, generally speaking, we look at people in the eye when we speak and our tone of voice and that type of thing. So try to do it around play. If he has, you know, superhero characters or, you know, some other way that you can incorporate that into play, that would be very helpful. Mm. When it does happen again, I would remind him to use his friend, you know, when you're practicing, say, we're going to practice friendly, how to be friends, how to be friendly. And so when it happens again, you can give him a reminder, you know, let's try to practice those friendly skills, or let's try to practice being friendly. It's also possible you could even come up with a code word that whenever you give this code word, he knows that that's the reminder that he's supposed to use those skills that he's learned throughout your play.
Okay.
So the final thing I would suggest, and this is for parents, other parents who might be listening to this, where it's not so much that they don't know how. They know how to be polite, and they're just being rude, or they're doing backtalk. I do have a teleseminar on backtalk, and I share in there the different reasons why children will sometimes behave this way. We've covered one of those, which is unintentional misbehavior. But I also share in there how to recognize when it is unintentional and on purpose, what to do in terms of responding, how to teach children skills. And so it's much more comprehensive. We spent almost an entire hour just on that topic. So there's probably more information there.
Okay.
All right. And I'm going to let, Chris, you're watching the chat room, so I'm going to let you tell me if anything comes through that way or with the callers.
Okay.
If not, did we get any other questions by email?
Yes, we did. And question number 3 here is, my son, and it says he's 6 years old, has such a hard time paying attention and remembering what it is that he needs to do. He'll forget to put on his clothes in the morning. Yeah, that could be a problem. Stop halfway through eating breakfast and just start singing. Get halfway through homework and just zone out. He loses focus very easily and has a very hard time paying attention. He doesn't seem to be able to tune out his surroundings. Even if there are no distractions in the room, it seems like he is preoccupied with something he is thinking about in his mind. We have tried staying close to help remind him. We have tried timers. We've tried touching him to remind him to stay on task. But it seems no matter what we have tried, we cannot seem to get him on task. Can you give us some tips to help him stay on task and dealing with this constant battle to keep him engaged?
Good question. And I'm going to give you some starters for this. I'm going to give you some starter tips for this. Some things you can do now. Some things, as he gets older, you'll be able to do and he'll be able to catch on more to. And if it continues to be a problem and you're really feeling like at the age that he's at, because at 6, it's still kind of borderline. I wouldn't be jumping right to saying necessarily, you know, he needs to be diagnosed for attention deficit or anything like that. I do have a section in my book on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and I actually have the DSM-4 diagnostic criteria the parents can read to see and kind of do their own. It's not going to be a clinical assessment, but it would help them determine if they need to consult with a professional and possibly have the child evaluated. But to back up, before we go down that road, I do think that this is a skill that doesn't come naturally to all children. Some children are very much, you can either call it having their heads in the clouds, or they're just very internal children. Your long-term goal is that rather than you constantly being the one to remind him, that he starts to learn how to remind himself, that he learns techniques and skills for being able to refocus himself. Some short-term things that you might be able to do right now at the age that he's at, you mentioned several things in here about he'll be in some process of a routine and lose track of where he is in the steps of the routine. Something that might be helpful is at the age that he's at, rather than going with words in terms of like a to-do list or checklist, of having pictures. So something like the different things that he does to get ready in the morning, such as putting on clothes, brushing his teeth, getting something to eat, having pictures of each of those things, and as he does each one, he can move it from, you know, one, you know, needs to be done maybe over to another side of this chart, or however you do this, put, you know, even if it's a little picture, he puts it in a different bowl or something, that he's done those things to keep him on track and moving forward. Another thing that I would have him do is one of the things that I hear him doing is singing and talking to himself. And you can actually use that to his advantage by having him sing a song about what it is that he's doing. So while he's getting dressed, you know, now I'm going to put on my shirt, put on my shirt, put on my shirt, and he sings that until he gets his shirt on. And then he says, now I'm going to put on my pants, until he gets those pants on. And so just by focusing, the song will help him stay focused on what he's doing and can help him prevent getting distracted from all these, you know, I call some thoughts are like monkeys jumping on trees, you know, and that's the way our thoughts can be. Our thoughts can be just like monkeys swinging on trees, and they can be very distracting. And every little thought that comes into our head, it can pull us off if we get attached to it. So the longer term idea here is that what you want to be working with him on as he gets older is to help him become a more aware of his thoughts, and rather than grabbing onto every single thought that pops into his head and allowing it to drag him off of his focus, to simply observe them, to kind of become an observer to those thoughts. And this is actually something I teach in the stress management class to adults, is to become more aware of his thoughts and to just let them float by like they're on clouds. They're not monkeys. They're just like on clouds, and he doesn't have to latch onto them and get distracted. And you can start by having him just talk aloud to himself, and this would be something to do at home, not at school. Same with the singing the song, unless he wants to sing it in his head, so he isn't disrupting the class. But when he's home, just have him talk aloud to himself so that he starts to become aware of the thoughts that he's having, and then he can be making more conscious choices about which thoughts he wants to choose to focus on. By giving him skills that he can use, that's the real key here. You want him to be developing the skills. You're going to teach him the skills, but you want the reminders and the techniques to be something that he can do on his own, so that maybe initially, you know, you can be reminding him to use the skill as opposed to reminding him what to do. You want him to be remembering what to do by using the skills that you're teaching him. The other thing that I would suggest, and this is, again, something you can do right now, is to have him do tasks and games and activities that require focus, like puzzles, drawing, things like that. Don't expect him to necessarily spend a lot of time with them initially, but see if it can even be, let's do a puzzle for 5 minutes and see if he can just keep his focus for that 5 minutes. Take a break, do other things. Next night, let's just do it for 10 minutes and see if he can stay focused for 10 minutes. Don't up the time until he's able to stay focused on the amount of time that you were at. So say you say, let's do 5 minutes, and he can't do 5 minutes. Next night, that's okay, then, you know, the 5 minutes is up. He can go off and do something else. Next night, do 5 minutes again. When he can do 5 minutes, then the next night, go up to 10. And if he can't handle the 10, do it as long as he can. Then the next night, start out at 10 again. And only up that once he, and I, it's kind of a similar technique that I use when I'm helping children with bedtime and staying in their bed and when parents come to check. I don't do the whole let them cry it out thing, and you don't come back until they stop crying. You come back and let those kids know that you are going to check on them, and you check every 5 minutes, and when they're quiet during that 5 minutes, then the next time you go up to 10. So it's kind of a similar process, but just with a different kind of an issue or task. So
sounds like you're talking a lot about you know, building healthy habits.
Yes.
And kind of starting small and building up.
Yes, and the real key here is that it's the child developing the skill so that the parent doesn't have to be responsible for reminding and nagging and refocusing and, you know, spending all that time. And I'm not saying that what this parent is doing is off base, because I think it's totally on base, and I think all of those are very helpful things to do. It is very helpful to get eye contact with, you know, tap on a shoulder, get eye contact with a child to maybe communicate a request. Another thing that's helpful is to have them repeat the request back to you so that you know that they really did hear you, because kids that don't focus, they'll look you straight in the eye and they'll nod their heads, and they really didn't even hear you. So having them repeat back is another way that you can make sure that children are listening and that it's kind of getting in. Also, I would say talk to the teacher, see if maybe she has some ideas. You know, ask around. There's a really good book called Raising Your Spirited Child by Mary Sheedy Kirchinka. And I bet you want me to spell that. It's Mary with a Y. Sheedy is S-H-E-E-D-Y. Kirchinka is K-U-R-C-H-I-N-K-A. And it's a book all about temperaments. I summarize it in Chapter 11 of the Parents' Tool Shop when we're talking about personality traits, when a skill doesn't come naturally to a child. But there is a section in there on children who are easily distracted, and she's got lots of really good practical tips in there. So that, I'm sure it's at the library. It's a classic. So I would go check that out for free. At the very least, read that chapter and see if maybe you can pick up a couple of extra tips.
And tell you what, Jody, well, after the show, I'll go ahead and hop out to Amazon and see if that happens to be available so that we can post a link on the links page for people if they wanted to check that out.
Okay, and I'm sure that it is. I was recently researching, and it's a bestseller, so I'm sure it's there. So that would be great, and you can just post a link to it. That sounds good. I'm noticing that we are at 20 minutes after the hour, and I want to give folks a chance to give us a call in. Let me do a real quick announcement, tell people how to call in, and then we'll take a look and see if we've got a caller who has their hand up. All right, let me take a few quick minutes here. This is Parents Tool Talk. I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell, author of the Parents Tool Shop, and tonight we're having an open question and answer session. Any question on any parenting skill or challenging situation the parents face. I'm not a crystal ball reader. I don't necessarily have all the answers, but I will absolutely do my best to answer it myself or refer you to someone who can. If you do have any questions during the live show today, you can either call in your question at 1-347-205-9654. That's 1-347-205-9654. If you have a question, hit the 1 on your phone keypad to raise your hand so that we know that you have a question and that you're not just listening to the show via your phone. You can also send us a question using the chat room at parentstooltalk.com. Just go to that link and then click on the Play Chat button just underneath today's show title and description, and you can type in a message, and my producer, Chris, is on standby in the chat room to take any of the questions that you've got there.
Standing by.
And then let me just say something about the Parents Tool Talk mailing list. If you would like to get access to this month's bonus resources, after every show, we do email out any resources that we mentioned. Sometimes we offer free copies of something or an article. When we have our guest experts on, they offer their resources. If you want to get those after each show, then sign up for the Parents Tool Talk mailing list. You'll get links to the featured resources, both from me and our guests, information about upcoming shows, tips on how to download the Parents Tool Talk recordings to your computer, how to subscribe to the show using an RSS feed, and more. And it's the only way, really, to get the exclusive information about future radio shows and access to the bonus resources and discounts that we only offer to our loyal listeners. So to sign up for the mailing list, just go to www.parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk.com/links, and that's L-I-N-K-S. Just know that I will never share your private information with anyone for any reason. This does put you on the main Parents Tool Shop list, and this Parents Tool Talk radio list is a sub-list of that. Now, actually, I'd like to have Chris break in for a minute and tell our listeners about a resource that I've been referring to a lot tonight, which is the Parents Tool Shop book. Would you do that for me, Chris?
Sure, Jody. Okay, so this is the book that Jody has already referenced, and it will no doubt be referencing more as the program goes forward. This is the Parents Tool Shop book. The full title is The Parents Tool Shop, The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. And this book was born out of Jody's years of teaching effective parenting skills to parents in mostly live in-person parenting classes. It's the basis for every principle taught in every Parents Tool Shop class and at the Parents Tool Shop website. This book organizes the most effective practical parenting tools into a unique formula called the Universal Blueprint for Parenting Success. And this is a formula that helps you find personalized solutions to all of your parenting challenges. So gone is the inaccurate, unhelpful, confusing, and contradictory advice that can detour your progress as a parent, replaced by a universal blueprint for parenting that is, again, universal, as if we haven't said that word enough, customizable, and effective. So the Parents Tool Shop book will give you that system. It's been proven for parenting every child from ages 1 to 18, and even shows you how to apply those skills to your adult relationships. So we hope you choose to make the Parents Tool Shop book a part of your library. We at least hope that you'll check it out. So for more information, go to www.parentstoolshop.com, and right there on the homepage, click on the picture of the Parents Tool Shop book. So I'll hand things back over to you now, Jody.
Thanks, Chris. All right. And just so that folks know, you can download Chapter 1 of the book for free. And I believe the page that link goes to has that option there.
Okay,
does it take them to the description page or to the order?
It takes them to the description where they can look at the endorsements, download a copy of Chapter 1, look at the table of contents.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. So feel free to download Chapter 1. It's an overview of the whole book and has some tips already right there in the first section of the book. So, all right, very good. Chris, do we have any other either questions in the chat room, topics that people have passed on to you that I might be able to get some information on, some of the more common questions we've been getting?
We don't have any more questions in the chat room, so I think you mentioned that you had a couple of things that you wanted to talk about, Jody, so maybe we should throw one of those in at this point.
Okay. I have gotten some questions, and I kind of ordered them in terms of the most common questions that I get, so they don't necessarily have a story to go with them that is from any particular family, but I think you'll see, as I mentioned some of these, that they're pretty universal challenges that a lot of people deal with. The first one that's really high on the list of popularity, I don't know if that's the correct word to use, is interrupting. And I will say for anyone who's been through the class or has listened to the audio series, the lunchtime audio series, and also I believe the misbehavior teleseminar, on all of those, when I am talking about the difference between unintentional and on-purpose misbehavior and how to identify the four goals of intentional misbehavior, which is attention, power, revenge, and giving up, don't expect you to remember that. When I go through those, when we talk about attention-seeking behavior, I use the example of interrupting as the example of how to use those skills. So there's a very universal, general way to handle this. And I always like, this is why I love teaching classes, because I get so much interaction, so I'm going to have to kind of do this a bit more one-sided, being on the radio tonight. But a lot of parents have been told, whenever their children are interrupting, that they should just ignore them. And most parents will tell you, when they try to ignore it, the problem behavior gets worse. Imagine you're on the phone, imagine you're talking to somebody, talking to a friend, talking in public, whatever, being interrupted. Part of why ignoring in and of itself as the first response doesn't work is because children don't really know a positive way to get your attention. So if you only ignore, it's not telling them what they need to do to get your attention in a positive way. Your general rule of thumb for any kind of misbehavior that's on purpose is to figure out what purpose is it that they're getting, and then how do you want them to get that purpose met through positive behavior? So you've got to tell them, if you want my attention, here's how you can get my attention in a positive way. So here's the key, and I'm going to give you a 1, 2, 3, okay? Number one, when children are interrupting, you can only stop once. If you stop more than once to remind them, nag them, repeat what you're saying, you are actually giving that interrupting behavior attention in a negative way. It's still giving a payoff. They're still getting attention. And you've all heard the saying, negative attention is better than no attention at all. You've got one chance. You can stop once. In that one sentence, one or two sentences, you want to tell the child how to get attention in a positive way, and then tell them that you are not going to pay attention to their interrupting or their whining, whatever it is that they're doing to get attention. Tell them the proper way to get your attention or when you will be able to give them your attention, depending on what the situation is. Once you've said that, then you can ignore, and it will tend to work, because when you ignore now, they know what you've told them they need to do to get your attention. So they're more likely to try that positive way of getting your attention. And as soon as they do, you want to respond when they do behave appropriately. You want to respond to them so that they see that that positive way of getting your attention is going to work. So if, when you ignore it, they just continue, you want to remove your attention or possibly even remove yourself to follow through. And I will sometimes tell the story about my children in learning how not to interrupt is that when I've almost always worked from home. And when my children were very young, I would still have phone calls. And if you're on a business call, it's not real professional, you know, to hear kids, you know, whatever, screaming and interrupting in the background. And you certainly don't hand off the phone and say, hey, Mr. So-and-so, would you talk to my son? You know, it's not grandma and grandpa. So I would use this technique, and if it didn't work and they'd be following me around, my kitchen phone, and this dates it, but we had a real long cord that like would go clear across the kitchen so I could peek around and look at them in the living room. I could walk around and see them outside, and so I could keep my eye on them while I was on the phone. I had this very long cord, and when they would come after me and not follow through with what I was telling them to do, I would go down. I would close the door behind me. I'd take a couple steps into the basement, into our lower level, and I'd close the door behind me, and I'd close the cord right into the door. And it was amazing because all they had to do was open that door, and they would have been at me again, but they didn't. It was a very clear message to them that I was removing myself from their attention. And when I was done, I would come out, and then I would pay attention to them and possibly explain again what it is they need to do. As they got older, of course, they were able to learn how to write, and they could write me notes when I'm on the phone, that kind of thing. But the funny thing is that I must have gone through 3 or 4 phone cords, closing them in the door. It just shaved off all that plastic coating. But it worked. And that's your 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, stop once. Tell children how to get your attention in a positive way. Then ignore the negative behavior. And when they respond in a positive way, then you want to give that attention. So that's your universal 1, 2, 3.
That's some very good advice. Is there ever a situation where the child may not stop until you take some kind of further action? Is there any situation where removing yourself might not actually fix the problem?
That's a good question. If it is, there may be a situation like that. If there is, here's what's really important. You do your 1, 2, 3, okay, just like I said. Then if they continue and say you try to remove yourself or whatever and it's just not working and you need to take the next step, which would be to maybe get off the phone and take care of it, at that time you want to have a very brief, even if it's a matter of seconds, just to say, excuse me, Chris, let me call you back in a few minutes. Even that little bit of a break from your attention, then when you go to address them, it will not have the same effect as just immediately stopping and reminding and nagging them. That little break, you need to have that little break. If you were to discipline while you're in the attention cycle, they're bidding for your attention, and your response is to discipline, that actually gives a payoff. They're still getting attention, but it's negative attention. So you still want to have some kind of a break so that it breaks that attention cycle. So that then when you go to address them, it's almost like a fresh interaction, and it's not a reaction to the actual misbehavior. Does that make sense?
That's very interesting. So even though you're intending it to be corrective, it's being perceived entirely differently unless you do that one little thing, put that little break in there.
Yes. Yeah. And all intentional misbehavior is like that, that if you discipline as an initial response to it, the discipline will either escalate the situation or it will give the behavior a payoff. Parents have to redirect the misbehavior first before moving on to discipline. Even if it's a half of a sentence, a half of a step, they've got to go through that step before they move on to discipline. Or when it escalates the situation, it actually turns the discipline into punishment, which means it's not going to work as well. And if it's giving a payoff, then obviously that's just reinforcing the misbehavior. So that's what's so important about learning the universal blueprint and what I call the PASSER formula, which are the 5 different steps of an effective response. When there's misbehavior, first thing is to redirect it, then reveal the discipline for it.
I see.
Good. Good. Good additional question.
Yeah. Jody, we do actually have a question from a caller.
Okay, great.
So I'm going to go ahead and it looks like they're calling in from Skype because we have a whole bunch of ones on the switchboard. So
okay.
If you're a caller, if you're calling in from a voice over IP, then you're probably the one who's about to be unmuted. So we're going to bring you into the show. And Hello there. Do you have a question?
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello. This is Kirpan.
Beg your pardon?
Hello?
This is Kirpan. You don't ask dumb questions.
Okay.
Hi, caller. You're actually coming in a little broken up. You might want to try hanging up and calling back, and we'll try to get you right back on the show, but we actually can't understand you right now. So we've gone ahead and muted that caller, Jody, just to give him a chance to reestablish his connection.
Yeah, that was, unfortunately, we couldn't understand what he was saying. So please call back. We do want to hear from you. So, good.
We do have a couple other topics here. Let's see. This is a question that was, it was more a topic that was put forth to us to talk about, and it's repeating yourself. And I'm guessing that it talks about a child repeating themselves, or maybe it's talking about a parent repeating themselves to their child. It could be either
probably
one of
the
them
parent.
Yeah.
I'm tired of repeating myself. And how many of us have heard the phrase, I've told you a million times. You should never have to tell a child something a million times. I make the joke, and I mean this with all respect. It is a joke. I say, if you have to tell your child something a million times, who's the dummy? Who's not catching on? So, and it is purely a joke. I have total respect for parents and really empathize with this. You know, this kind of relates a little bit to what I was saying before, so this is actually a good one to bring up now because we can build on what I was just talking about. A lot of parents, what they'll do is they'll tell their child not to do something or to do something, and they'll just keep saying the same thing one, two, three times, and maybe just louder. We got to make each sentence count. If it didn't work the first time, just repeating the exact same thing the next time or louder or longer isn't necessarily going to do the trick. And this is why I teach folks this passer formula. So let me just take a minute, and for those of you who are listening who haven't taken the class, who haven't read the book, let me give you a brief summary of the passer formula, because this is exactly the kind of situation that the passer formula is designed for. First of all, you want to prevent problems. So I assume the situation is you're asking your child, you're making a request, and you're having to repeat yourself. So taking that situation, first of all, use positive words to make your request. Instead of telling children, don't do something, stop doing that, quit doing that, you know, a rule that says no whatever, fighting, no yelling, no whatever. Instead, tell children what you want them to do. And another little mini side lesson there, because this particular tool, out of all 152, is the absolute best parenting tool ever, and it's the one that gets the most immediate results. I call it Don't Say Don't, and it really addresses just this very issue of telling children what not to do. Very briefly, in a nutshell, the mind operates in pictures. So when we say, don't run, you're going to fall, children see themselves running and falling. And we all know that any action that you rehearse in your mind and that you see yourself doing, you're more likely to do. Right now the Olympics are on. We're all watching the Olympics, and we see these athletes close their eyes and bob their heads, and they're imagining themselves doing the action that they want to take. So when I say, you know, don't think of a purple elephant, the mind doesn't hear don't. We immediately think of a purple elephant. If I say, imagine a red juicy apple, you don't imagine spelling out the word apple. You imagine an apple. The mind operates in pictures. So what we want to do is tell children what we want them to do. So instead of don't run, you're going to fall, just say walk. Instead of no biting, teeth are for chewing. Keep your teeth in your mouth. Instead of don't spill your drink, keep the drink in your glass. Keep the glass on the table. Tell children what you want them to do. So that's the first one in terms of repeating yourself. You can also offer choices. If they're jumping on a bed, you can say you can either jump on the trampoline or sit on the bed. If they're playing outside in their good clothes, you can either change your clothes and play outside, or you can come inside while you have on your good clothes. So those are all some ways that you can prevent problems from happening in the first place, or instead of just saying the same thing, don't do that, quit doing that, I told you to stop doing that. That's not giving them any additional information at all. Telling them what to do and then possibly telling them how to do it would be a better strategy, and that is just at the prevention level. The first time you need to say something in one sentence. After that, if it happens again, a lot of times don't say don't works immediately and often permanently. So I really encourage, and there's actually a free article on my website. Go to the articles, look up, I think it's disobedience is a word that's in there, that's in the description of the article. Go there, and it's a summary of don't say don't, so you can actually learn that and practice it. If that doesn't work, the next time that you need to say something, in one sentence you're going to take the next two steps of the PASSER formula. First step was prevent the problem from starting or worsening. Second step is acknowledge the child's feelings. And the third step is set limits or express your concerns. So we're going to take the next two steps in one sentence. So it would sound something like, I can see you want this. My concern is this. You can do this instead. So, for example, I can see that you want something out of the refrigerator, but I can't understand what you're saying when you whine. If you want something from the fridge, you're going to need to say, may I please have, and tell me what it is you want. So you acknowledge feelings, set limits in one sentence. I understand you want this. However, this is my concern, or this is what I need, or this is what you need to do, and then possibly follow that up with an acceptable alternative. If they start to help or cooperate, great. If they start but then they stop, just use a quick reminder, like one word or a nonverbal signal, to just remind them. You do not have to say the whole thing all over again. You pick up where you left off. If it doesn't change at all, then you want to redirect the misbehavior, and that's what I was just talking about in the previous question about interrupting. If it's for attention, you do the 1, 2, 3 I told you. If it's for power, you give choices within limits of what they can do. If it's revenge, you acknowledge the hurt, and if it's giving up, you give encouragement. And I also have that on the misbehavior teleseminar, and there's also an article on my website about the goals of misbehavior. If you need to move to discipline, which is the last step, so it's prevent problems from starting or worsening is P, A, acknowledge feelings, S, set limits or express your concerns, R is redirect misbehavior, and the other R is to reveal discipline. So if you need to reveal discipline, then you say if you choose to, and you reveal the negative, whatever that negative behavior is, if you choose to whine, if you choose to continue to jump on the bed, I'll know you've decided to, whatever the discipline is. I'll know you've decided to have nothing to drink right now. I'll know that you've decided to get off the bed, might be the discipline. If it involves removing something, you always want to say, I see that you've decided to give up, whatever that is, instead of, I'll take it away. So the example I always use in class is, instead of saying, if you ride your bike in the street, I'm going to take it away. Instead, you say, if you choose to ride your bike in the street, so they know it's their choice, I'll know you've decided to give up your bike because it's their decision, it's their behavior. We need for them to learn that their behavior is a choice and they will be held accountable for their behavior choices. So and I have that also on my website in a free article. There's tons of free advice there, folks. I also have how to discipline, difference between discipline and punishment, and how to discipline. We've also got a teleseminar just on discipline, how to do it, walk through all of the steps of what the options are and all that kind of stuff. But that's the brief one. So in all, when you use that PASSER formula, it usually only takes 3 to 5 sentences total. And what most people will do is they'll start, they'll give this big, long, they'll start short, and then they'll get longer, longer, louder, louder. I tell folks to flip that. Make your investment up front. Use the PASSER formula. In one sentence, acknowledge feelings and set limits. Next sentence, redirect misbehavior. Third sentence, reveal discipline. Prevention, you can use at any point at any of those. If that doesn't work, then you just give a quick reminder. Or if you've revealed discipline, you simply follow through. So that you're actually speaking less by using the PASSER formula up front, you're investing that time up front, you're covering all your bases, you're preventing the problem, you're de-escalating the situation by acknowledging their feelings, you're expressing your concerns, telling them how to behave, and telling them what will happen if they don't. 3 sentences. You've covered your bases, then all you need to do is simply follow through. So you don't repeat yourself ever. You say it once, and then you either give a reminder, get shorter, or you follow through.
That's obviously a skill that's going to take some practice for parents.
Yes, which is why it's great to be able to do the class or one of our teleclasses that we do, because I can give people the opportunity. We do lots and lots of practice. We do lots of games in class. People read before they get there. We review the skills, make sure they've got the content, and then we spend a lot of time practicing and doing problem solving. So it's lots of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you're unable to take the class, then you can get the book, which is so much of what's covered in the class right there in a portable format, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Oh, I'm just realizing it's a quarter till. Let's do our – we have announcements, don't we?
We do.
Let's go back to that. Let's take a quick station break. For those of you who just joined us, this is Parents Tool Talk, and I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell of the Parents Tool Shop. Tonight we're having an open question and answer session. Any question on any parenting skill or challenging situation that parents are facing, you're welcome to ask about. If you have any questions during the live show, you can either call in at area code 1-347-205-9654. I'll say that again, 1-347-205-9654, and then hit the 1 on your phone keypad to raise your hand. Or send us a question using the chat room at www.parentstooltalk.com, and then you look for the play/chat button on that homepage, and that gets you into the chat room where Chris is monitoring and can take your question. And I'm sad that our person wasn't able to call back in. That may have been his only way of calling in. We do sometimes run into problems with cell phones and voice over internet IP protocol. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so sometimes we do, unfortunately, run into problems with that. Landlines are ideal, and we will work with you however we can. So go to the chat if you can't call in. Let's see. Do you have more announcements for tonight?
I just have one announcement.
Okay,
and
why don't you do that? I need a drink.
Sure, no problem. And let's see. It is on a different page than the one I'm holding in my hand, of course. Let's see. Okay,
and by the way, that's not an alcohol drink, folks. That's a water drink.
She says. No. No, we believe you. Okay. Yes, the other announcement that we had, because what Jody has been mentioning already, the book, the Parents Tool Shop book, she's also been mentioning another resource, and that resource is the Parents Tool Shop Teleseminar Series. And Jody mentioned having a teleseminar. Oh, gosh darn, Jody, my memory's failing me. I forget the one that you mentioned.
I mentioned a couple of them. Back talk, discipline,
right.
Punishment versus discipline, misbehavior.
That's right.
There's one on cooperation where I teach the don't say don't and choices.
Yes, yes. So what we want to do tonight is just tell our listeners a little bit more about this whole series. This is a series of actually 12 teleseminars. They were recorded live with Jody and a group of parents and family service professionals from around the world. And what we've done is we've taken these 12 teleseminars along with a little bonus audio and put them into a package. We call it the Parents Tool Shop Teleseminar Series. And this consists of 13 audio CDs, 12 of which are enhanced with additional resources. And each of these teleseminar CDs includes the full recording of each teleseminar, that's 1 hour, and a complete transcript and all of the resources that were available to the original teleseminar participants. So it's just like you were actually there. As far as the topics covered, Jody mentioned a few just now. In addition, we have topics like holiday parenting issues, which parents will all be dealing with in another 10 months or so. And dealing with difficult people, each of which Jody has talked about with guests on her radio show as well. The collection offers in-depth training on how to handle situations like sibling rivalry, temper tantrums, bedtime hassles, morning delays, picky eaters, of which I am still one, tidiness, truthfulness, and more. And each collection includes that 13th bonus CD, which is a rare interview with Jody, rare up to this point, I guess, and a discussion on the subject of kids and money. That's actually a very good recording, talking about allowances and a number of other very good topics to help teach your kids about money. We're very excited about this new resource package, and we hope that you'll take the time to check it out. In addition to the more detailed descriptions of each teleseminar, on our website we have 5-minute samples from each one, and that's about an hour of content from the collection that you can sample for free. So to find out more about the Parents Tool Shop Teleseminar Series collection, go to parentstoolshop.com and scroll down to the bottom of the page, and that's where you'll see a picture of the Teleseminar Series collection and a link for more information. So just click on that link, and that's all you'll have to do. And now I'll hand things back over to you, Jody.
Okay, great. Thanks, Chris. And I'm going to have you check the we're getting down to the last 10 minutes, so I'll have you check the chat room again. Hopefully our caller will be able to call in, or if someone else wants to call in, we're winding down to the last 10 minutes. I do have a couple of other questions that people have submitted to me, and these are more specific. They do have more of a specific story or question from that particular family, and I said that I would get to them. I didn't know if they'd be on the call tonight or not.
Okay.
One is, Mom says, my 11-year-old is not doing great in school. I know he's capable. He does very well on standardized tests and has had straight A's on many report cards. We just moved, and he has been moved around for the past couple of years, so he is really mad about it. Should the move be affecting his academic performance? Should I give him a break until he settles in? So, and this is a very perceptive question, because one of the things that parents will tend to do is they'll just tend to react to the behavior and not take a look at what underlying issue might be causing the behavior. So I think the fact that she's seen that he has the capacity to get good grades and is making the connection that being moved around and he's unhappy about that, that that could be a core problem of what we need to get to. That means, and here's another tip in terms of using the universal blueprint, when you are faced with a problem, you need to figure out what type of problem it is. If it involves peers, emotions, siblings, or school, it's what we call a child problem. And this one not only involves school, it also involves emotions, because he's been moved around and he's very unhappy about that. So it's a child problem. In a child problem, it's up to the child to solve the problem, but our role in that is to support and guide children through that process. So rather than taking over the problem and saying, here's what you're going to do, or here, I'm going to solve it for you, we use a particular technique that I will walk you through that helps children figure out what's going on and come up with their own solution. And you can use this process with children as young as 3, as long as they're verbal. You do a much more condensed version of it than you do when you do it with an older child. And I do have a teleseminar, one of the teleseminar packages, on listening and siblings, and that's where you'll learn those skills. So briefly, problems are like onions. So the problem you see on the surface is just a symptom of the underlying issue. So if you only deal with the symptom without resolving the core issue, the symptom will probably come back. In this case, school probably is not the issue. It's probably the underlying issue that he's upset about all these frequent moves. So here's a couple of tips, Mom, for what to do. Invite him to share how he feels about moving. Allow him to express his unhappiness. You do not have to agree with it by accepting or listening to that's how he feels. Do not criticize his feelings. Do not try to talk him out of it. Just acknowledge that those are his feelings and validate that that is his experience and he's allowed to have it. Then ask him, that's the first step of the facts listening. You focus on their feelings. Second, you ask helpful questions, F-A-X. Focus on feelings, ask helpful questions. Ask him what would be helpful for him to adjust. You don't need to offer him advice or try to fix his feelings or rescue him from his feelings or tell him to get over it. Don't give him any ideas or advice. He needs to provide the ideas and tell you what he needs to adjust and what kind of support he needs and wants. Then you go to step 3, which is examine possible options, and you brainstorm different ways that you can do that. You're going to do your best to provide support. If he suggests something that's unrealistic, like moving back to one of the old locations, brainstorm ideas for how he can stay in touch with the people that he misses from those locations. When he starts to work through and resolve his feelings about the move, chances are his school performance is going to automatically and naturally improve. So that would be my suggestion. And Chris, I'm going to have you check one last time to see if there's anybody in the chat room or online on the phone. Are there any additional live questions that we want to take?
We do have one more live question.
Okay.
So I'll go ahead and read that. This is coming from the chat room.
Okay.
And this is an excellent question here. My son brought home a toy from school that does not belong to him. I have asked questions to encourage him to return the toy. For example, what if you lost it? Did you ask the teacher if she knew who it belongs to? I see what you're saying. She's asking, I've asked questions to encourage him to return the toy. And, you know, like saying to him, what if you lost a toy? That's
mm-hmm.
what she was saying. Did you ask the teacher if she knew who it belongs to, et cetera? However, he still says he will not take it back. What would you suggest, Jody, that the next step would be?
Good question. And it sounds like, what a perfect segue for the question, because I just got done describing the facts listening process, and that sounds a lot like what this parent has been doing, asking helpful questions to get her child to accept responsibility, brainstorming ideas, you know, what could you tell the teacher? Have you tried this? Have you tried that? I think at this point, what we need to recognize is this is not simply only 100% child problem. It would have been if he had responded and replied back in terms of solving the problem. What I would say at this point is that he has a decision to make, that he chose to take a toy that wasn't his, and the honest thing to do is to return it. And he has a choice. He can return it, and he can have another opportunity to be able to play with toys and that type of thing. If he chooses to disrespect other people, to not value toys, then maybe he needs to give up one or more of his toys temporarily until he can be thinking about and maybe making a different choice about how he treats toys, his or others. And I know we're getting short on time, but what you want to do is once you dealt with the child problem, whenever it's a combo problem, and that's what this is, you always deal with the child part first, and you've done that. There is also misbehavior, and so you will need to move forward, figure out what is it that he's getting from having this toy that's not his. Chances are it's power. It could be revenge if he is taking it from a child that he doesn't like. So that could be an option also. And then brainstorm ideas for how he can meet that purpose without taking the toy. How can you, if you're angry with this child, what could you do besides taking his toy? If you want a toy that you really like but can't have, what are the options that you have for getting that? But regardless, once you've done that and he's still not responding, you do need to move on to discipline, and it does need to be logical, related, reasonable, respectful. So I would suggest something that relates to him not having toys would probably be the most logically related to him taking a toy that wasn't his, and possibly escorting him to return it to the teacher. I wouldn't force that, though, to the point that you're, like, physically dragging him in there. If it has to resort to physical force, you don't want to go there, and I would go for something more like a logical consequence.
Mm.
And the teleseminar or the article on discipline might give you some additional techniques to use. So.
That's great, Jody. We're actually coming to the end, so we probably need to wrap it up.
Okay. This has been Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm Jody Johnston Powell. We're wrapping up our first ever open question and answer program here on Parents Tool Talk. Actually, this is the second of three. Want to let everyone know that our next open Q&A program will be on Tuesday, March the 23rd, and it will be at 7 p.m. We're testing out time. So we're not quite sure whether we're going to do another Q&A show after that. That decision is yours. And by the time we air our third Q&A program next month, we will have some easy ways for you to show us if you want this open Q&A format to continue. So watch for our next program on Blog Talk Radio. And if you want news about future shows delivered right to your inbox, then go to parentstooltalk.com/links and sign up for our mailing list. Also, our next episode of Parents Tool Talk with guest expert will be Friday, March the 12th, and we'll be discussing how to teach children and teens your values with special guest expert Harriet Heath. If you like what you heard today, please let us know. You can send your comments and feedback to questions@parentstooltalk.com. So I hope you'll join me for the next Q&A show if you can. Either join us live or email me your questions in advance. That email address, once again, is questions@parentstooltalk.com. So until next time, I wish you all a great week and a great month. This is Jody Johnston-Powell on behalf of myself, my producer Chris, and all of us here at Parents Tool Shop. I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, and I look forward to talking to you next time.